it's time to go under the helmet. This is the Gerald Riggs Show on TalkZone.com with your host, former All-Pro running back for the Falcons and the Redskins, Gerald Riggs.
All righty, folks. Hello out there. And welcome back to myself. Let's put it that way. I had a chance to get away and get some other things done. Boy, it's always interesting at this time of year when there's so much happening. You've got to make time to do some other things around the house and of course in the business world too. And speaking of the business world, let's get to the business right now of what's going on in sports right now as we, you know, I try to tackle again sports issues and all that. Now I try to get away, try to keep it simple. Let's put it that way. Yeah, I like to do my community stuff and certainly there's a lot of other things that I'm involved with. But right now, it's still football season. So much going on, so much happening, and you know that's what makes the world turn. Football, NFL in particular, and even more so in the college. And we're going to be talking today on both levels. As today, I'm going to those first few minutes, we're going to bring in somebody from the college world, DJ Shockley. He's an ex-quarterback at NFL who's really involved with college football now. He's a backup quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons for a few years, come out of the University of Georgia, quarterback down there. It was an MVP in the SEC championship game back, when they played, I think it was in 2005. So he'll be coming on talking a little bit about, college football and certainly the all the selection process and things that are going on. I think it'll be interesting to hear his take on it, because it's still, even though they don't have the so-called BCS, championship thing in that whole moniker that they had at one point in time, it's still crazy and it's still going to be convoluted and it still is going to come down to more than just four teams buying for a national championship. I think before it's all over with, it's going to get pretty nasty. Two teams right now undefeated and that looks great for them. Right now, everybody has to say it looks good. This is the way that it should be. But before it's over with, folks, it's going to get a little bit crazy. Just watch and see. Especially when the SEC in particular continue to keep beating up on each other. Nobody else can do it. Nobody outside of the conference can do that. So it's almost like, well, maybe for the championship people, they're saying that, you know, they make it easy for us because by process of them playing against each other, the process of elimination is right there within the conference. It's not, we don't have to worry about other schools coming in or saying that, you know, one of the other schools is going to come in and do something in the SEC to just totally throw everything out the, you know, or make it crazy or throw all of what they've done out the window. That's going to be interesting. But we're going to talk to DJ Shockley about that here, shortly. And then after him, another good, dear friend of mine, Orlando Ledbetter, who is the president of the, NFL Writers Association. He's going to come on and talk all things Falcons as one of my most confusing teams now in the league. At the beginning of the season, high expectations, wanting to go back to look at what they did, you know, 2 years ago and talking about how explosive they can be on offense and explosive they can be on defense. And, you know what? It's like, you know, trying to light the flint on the old guns or whatever. If you get them wet or something, it's just more like a spark. There's been no explosion with the Falcons. Oh, they've managed to beat Tampa Bay twice. And I think if it were a third time, Tampa would probably beat them. As you saw that game over the weekend, you watched that. And I'm at the point to where there are a couple of teams that I'm almost going to ban from being talked about on this show. And two of them, let's say one of them, I am just absolutely befuddled to see what goes on with the receivers that they have, the offense that they have. Defense, I know there's some questions, but you would think that they would be much more, they would be better off at some aspects of the game and get some more wins. And that's the Chicago Bears. I am totally confused by them. You saw that game against Green Bay. You'd have to say, Tressman, buddy, we're about ready to pack you up and send you right on back to Canadian football. Because whatever you're doing over there in Chicago, it ain't working, buddy. And that team is starting to look like, I mean, at one point in time, the North Division was considered the Black and Blue Division. Well, there's not black and blue going on there. I can see a bunch of merry-go-rounds and, you know, some hopscotch games going on or a whole bunch of other stuff, but not football. But hopefully they can turn around before it's all over with. Or Trestman's going to probably be one of those coaches that everybody's going to say, you know, he's just a flash in the pan. You know, NFL and Canadian football, it just, it's not the same. But we'll find out about them. We'll talk about the Chicago Bears a little bit and the Falcons. Those are, like I say, the teams that I'm going to kind of highlight today. And then also right in this corridor, which is, it's almost kind of, it's, it gets kind of humdrum boring right now because the Falcons are, you know, they get a win in the 5-game winning streak, losing streak, excuse me. But then you got the Titans on the other end too. The Titans on, I mean, just right up the road, and I don't know what it is. Must be something in the water between the two rivers or something. You know, what is going on? I have no idea because the Titans just a few years ago, under Fisher, they were a team that they were to be reckoned with. They, you know, going to the Super Bowl, same thing with the Falcons. They've gotten there and look what's happened to both of them. Both teams are just absolutely, just being washed up. Now they're not the Oakland Raiders by far. I know that. And like I say, the Raiders, that's the other team that I refuse to talk about on the show. The Raiders until they can finally get a win. And that's, you know, what about that? If you're living in a city like Los Angeles, you got two very, very, very well-known franchises, one in the LA Lakers and one in the Raiders, at least in the the California. And both teams struggle to get a win. The Lakers finally get a win the other night and the Raiders haven't won yet. That must be very, very tough to be in, you know, between those two teams in those two cities, and geographically on the same side of the United States and not have a win. That's pretty tough. Yeah, pretty darn tough. But it's, like I say, I'm not even going to waste my time talking about the Raiders until they can pull it together. I really feel bad for the organization and what they've gone through. You know, they, you know, that Al Davis is no longer there and the family is kind of running the team and, there's a couple of people who probably, you know, have their differences in how things should be done. And it's just a mess. It's a mess. And, who is it? McKenzie, I believe it is, who's the GM there. And he is having a very, very difficult time. How do you justify the players that you have on that team? How can you be that bad? The NFL, and I always said that there are a lot of all the teams, even though the records sometimes may not reflect the kind of players that are on the team necessarily, but you have to always look and say that these guys are considered the best of the best of the best. You know, kind of that old line from Will Smith and Men in Black or whatever. Why? How is it that a coach cannot pull these 53 guys together to manage one win? Everybody was probably scratching their heads like I am and looking at the whole Raiders situation and saying, you know, are these guys just, you know, they're just wearing a uniform? Are they just collecting a check? Are they just happy to be in the NFL? I tell you what, I'm a poor loser. And there's just no way in the world that I could be on a team like that and not have a voice, not being, you know, people being, other players being heard to say that, you know, we're tired of this. You know, we're mad as hell. We're not going to take it anymore. That sort of stuff. But you don't see that with the Raiders. I don't know what's going on. And I, you know, really they don't show that many of their games out this way because again, I'm in Chattanooga. So we get a lot of, you know, more so the Falcons and the Titans and, you know, Redskins and maybe some of the NFC, you know, the East or something like that. But no, I don't get it. And I really don't want to watch a team that's that bad because, you know, week in and week out, if they're playing like that and they're not even coming close, maybe coming close to one or two games. That's not enough. It's not good enough. And certainly I don't understand what's happening out that way. We're here in the next couple of weeks. We may explore it and see what's going on and get somebody on the phone to talk about the Raiders situation because everybody's looking at it and trying to figure out why is this team so bad? Why the only winless team in the NFL? I mean, not far behind Tampa and you know, teams like that, but still. The Jets, but they won. They managed to get one done. The Raiders. I don't know what to say about them folks, but you can have them. You can have your Raiders. All those people out there. You can keep them. We don't want to have anything to deal with them out here, out this way. I tell you what, we're going to, again, like I was saying today, we're going to talk a little bit about some college football. Let me also say today too that we had an unfortunate loss in the NFL amongst the NFL family. And it's always something that, you know, that when guys, when we lose a life, We all feel it in the NFL community. And Orlando Thomas, who was a safety who played with the Minnesota Vikings, you know, he has passed at age 42. Age 42, folks. That's young. And I, as I always say, and I, when I go and talk to people, and I sit back and I reflect sometimes, and even when I've gone to events, let's put it that way, more than I've gone to events, and I see certain players, and I can sit back and reflect on the guys who were there, and then at the same time think about the guys who are no longer with us. I don't know of any other company, other business or whatever that basically you can look across the board and see how many players are no longer there. I'm not talking about just not in the building, so to speak. How many have left us? How many have gone on? You know, and I like to believe all of them have gone to heaven to be with God. But how many players have gone? I think at one count back in the night, I think we were kind of together and a couple of guys who were very, very privy to information in terms of, you know, the NFL database. And saying, you know, well, this many players. Somebody took account and it was like almost 50 some odd guys from a year that I played that are no longer here with me. And it's almost scary. It's scary. And then you look at what's happened here with Orlando Thomas, who again, he dies at the age of 42 of ALS. Another one of those examples of how this disease is being connected to pro sports, at least football. Because of the, you know, some of the head injuries and all that sort of stuff. And at the same time, we don't want to scare people off from the game, but these are things that have happened in the game. These are things they've gone on. These are things that these guys have had to deal with over the years. And that's the trade-off for this type of a game. Unfortunately. Now, there are a lot of guys who don't go through all this. I pray that I don't ever have to go through anything like that. But this guy battled this for about 10 years, had lost all of his motor skills. He wasn't able to talk. Only thing that could basically, operate on him was eyelids. And that's how he kind of communicated with his wife. Very, very sad story, but, sad to lose him. All right. All righty, folks. We are actually going to take a quick break here. And then when we come back, hopefully we can, get, DJ Shockley on the phone and we're going to chat with him again about, some college football and things that are going on. In the world of the NCAA and all that. He's pretty happy, too, because they get that boy, Gurley boy. He's coming back to Georgia from after got it put in his pockets, lining his pockets with a little bit of money. All right, folks, we'll take a quick break here. Gerald Riggs Show, Under the Helmet, right here at TalkZone Radio, TalkZone.com. We'll be right back.
Let's go back under the helmet for more of the Gerald Riggs Show. Here's Gerald Riggs.
All righty, folks. We're back here underneath the helmet with Gerald Riggs. That is I. Again, talking a little bit today about some of the things that are going on in the world of college sports. And want to be able to kind of touch bases with someone who's right there in the know. Let's bring a very, very special guest and a very, very talented young man who's, I'll tell you what, he's making headways. He's probably going to be a host of his own big college football show here pretty soon. I know he will. I have that kind of confidence in him. We got DJ Shockley here talking about some college football. DJ, are you there?
Jerry, I can't believe you gave me that kind of welcome. That's pretty awesome. I mean, I appreciate it, but hey.
Well, you as they say, you're the man. All right, you were the man at Georgia at one point in time.
I'm only calling the man who is Gerald Riggs, so that's what I'm trying to do.
All right, stop. Right. I appreciate it though, man. But anyway, it's a pleasure to have you on. Good to hear from you. Yeah, it's been a long time since we had a chance to talk. But you know, I want to kind of talk about the things that are going on right now in the world of college sports. And you have to be pretty happy, at least a little bit happy, because your Georgia Bulldogs, they finally get Gurley coming back in the mix. Let's start there. You know, Mark Richt, he gets this guy back in. What's ahead now for Georgia? Can they close this thing out strong? Can they make a real strong bid here with some other things happening to possibly put themselves in a good position down the season for the rest of the season?
Yeah, gee, that's the big thing about it is, you know, they still are in a good position to do so. Obviously, the big loss of Florida and, you know, the loss of South Carolina early in the year doesn't help because neither one of those teams have been, you know, playing pretty well. And I think both of them are under 500 maybe. But those games definitely hurt you in the national picture of everything. But when I think about where they're at now, the position they can be in, and there's still a lot of things to go on in college football, still a lot more football to be played. And Georgia has a huge game this weekend versus Auburn, who's above them right now. So, yeah, that's going to be an outstanding game. Then you couple that with getting Todd Gurley back, like you just mentioned, being out the last four games. They were 3-1 while he was out, but he is a dynamic player. I mean, regardless of, you know, everything that's happened off the field, and Gerald, you know, as a running back, anytime a guy like him can change a game, I think he adds so much to your team.
He most definitely does. And the thing that I look at it now with a player of his magnitude, first legs are going to be huge in this game. He's not going to be beat up like some of the other guys are at this point in time of the season. Let's talk first, before we get into the stuff about the, you know, the rest of the NCAA. What about Mark Richt now? You know, he's a coach that has had some good teams over the years, but he has not been able to solidify that position of saying, well, we're in a national title game. You know, it's being closed, but no cigar. And it seems like the people there are still, you know, you hear the grumblings, you know, that, well, maybe it's time to move on, but you cannot really disagree with the job that the guy has done there at Georgia. I feel like leave him alone, but what's your take on what everybody else is saying?
It's tough. I tell you, for a guy who I played for him, so I know exactly what he's about. I understand how much preparation and how much hard work he puts into not only as a game plan, but through a season, off season. And for people, you know, want him to be out, I understand the big picture of it. Hey, you want to be in the national championship picture because you got teams in your own conference like Alabama and Auburn, you know, they've been playing for national championships the last 2 years, LSU, you know what I mean? So that makes it a little bit harder, and you're recruiting kind of the same guys. But, you know, Coach Rick is a guy who last few years always winning 9-10 games a season. You're always in contention. You're always on the verge. You're always in the picture. You look at, there's a lot of teams around the country who they have 2-3 spurts, so they have 2-3 year spurts where they're not in it, and some years they're not. Georgia is always in the picture, and always because of Coach Rick and how he teaches, how he goes out and prepares guys to play, and you just look at guys going to the next level. He prepares them for that next level as well.
Yeah, I side with you on that one. I think that he's done a wonderful job, and I've had an opportunity to talk with him on a few occasions, and I really do admire him for what he has been able to do in spite of some of the things that go on a campus with the players. You know, every school goes through these things where they've had some suspensions or whatnot, but he has still maintained to have a very, very good team there.
Absolutely, and that's the biggest part about it is he prepares these guys well week in and week out. There's not a player that steps onto that field that understands their game plan and what goes into it. And a lot of people, he gets a lot of grief because they don't win those national championships, but his main goal is about creating a great environment for him to grow into a man, to get his degree. And once he leaves the University of Georgia, he's a changed guy from a boy to a man. And the winning in football is a part of that. And he's trying to teach him along with that. And one thing that people don't know is, as you know, as you go through your college ranks, Coach Rick, each year as a freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, he has character ed classes where they sit down, they talk nothing about football. It's all about what's going on in your life. He wants to know exactly how these guys are outside of football. And I think that's what matters a lot, is these kids know he cares about them.
Wow, that's great. Now, I can't echo enough about the effort that he's given there at Georgia this complete time. Let's go now to the NCAA and all this whole everything that's going on. This bowl picture is starting to, right now, it's seeming like it's kind of coming clear, being that there's two teams that are undefeated. But as you know, in the SEC, which seems to be the ones that are they're eliminating one another almost. And I think that's what makes it easy for this whole selection committee to see that the SEC teams are pretty much beating up on each other at this point in time. How do you feel this whole process is going to kind of finish out at the end of the year?
Oh, gee, it's going to be so interesting to see what happens. I mean, you still got a lot of big-time games to be played, especially in the SEC West, where you got the Egg Bowl that's still being played between Ole Miss and Mississippi State. You got Mississippi State and Alabama have to play. Auburn and Alabama have to play. Just in that conference alone, you got so many games to be decided that can determine the playoff picture. And obviously, Florida State and Oregon are two teams that everybody's saying, hey, they're probably sold into their spot. I don't think nobody's thinking they're going to lose a game coming up. But there's some other teams like TCU who's starting to make some noise. You know, I mean, they're doing a good job of winning games and winning them impressively, putting up their numbers. they can slide into it, and everybody's saying, hey, Alabama's still in a good position to take that top four. So there's a lot of teams that's still in the ranks. And you even talk about an Ohio State team. I know they had a tough loss versus Virginia Tech early in the year, but that win last week versus Michigan State was as big as any. And if any of the other things fall, they could find themselves right in that top four as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of disappointed in you right there. You jumped over my team to go all the way to Ohio State. Well, you know, you bypassed the Arizona State Sun Devils. That's kind of grounds for not coming back on the show again. But I'm gonna let it slide this time. All right.
I like Arizona State as well. They've done a good job. I mean, they just whooped up on Notre Dame. So I mean, yeah. you gotta count them as a part of this, you know, equation as well. So no disrespect to the Sun Devils. They definitely played football and showed it this weekend down there.
Okay, well, you kind of limped your way back into that one, but that's all right. I'm glad I appreciate that. But now, you're talking about some huge games. And we look at it, you're talking about Alabama, even though they're sitting right there. I think that they're at four or five. They're five. But they could actually
– Oregon's going to move up, yeah.
Yeah, and I think Alabama is in the most unique situation in that they could possibly be back in that fourth spot or the third spot because they've got Mississippi State coming up this week. They beat Mississippi State, if they beat Mississippi State, let's put it that way, it's at Alabama. So all the ifs and all that sort of stuff, I can kind of throw it out the window. But if they win that game, they put themselves right back in the contention to be in that championship picture.
Oh, easily. No doubt about it. And I think that's what Nick Saban prides himself on is, you know, hey, you may lose a game, but you got to continue to just improve and play good football. And especially with how the SEC West is this season, it's so easy for them to fall back in that race. If they beat, like you said, Mississippi State, who's number one in the country, it's so easy for them to jump in that top four already with them and TCU. And there's a couple of teams on the outside, but if that happens this weekend, Alabama, no doubt about it, will be in that top four, and it'll come down to a huge game versus them and Auburn, and then also the SEC championship game. So they pretty much control their own destiny right now in the way the college football looks.
Wow, the picture is getting murky, but I tell you what, it makes for some exciting football. I'm looking forward to it. DJ, and I know you are. What are you doing now? I don't want to give you no false billing or whatever, but I know you work with one of the networks now. Which one are you with?
Yeah, I'm staying pretty busy down here in Atlanta. I do a couple of things with the Atlanta Falcons, a team you know a lot about. Do some stuff.
The confusing team. I've already kind of dubbed them very, very confusing right now. I don't know what to think about them.
You don't know, but I do some Atlanta Falcons stuff online with them. I do call high school football games on Friday nights. I do Mercer games. I call Mercer University games on ESPN3 on Saturdays, and then I work for the Big Ten Network. As well, as a studio analyst.
An SEC guy in the Big Ten. Ooh.
I know, it's crazy, right? And the way you know.
Well, you know what? You sound like a very busy man, and again, you deserve all that you can. I as I always tell you, I pray that you continue to have success. I appreciate you coming on and joining me, and we'll do it again another time.
Yeah, I just appreciate you remembering a little guy like myself to be on a great show like this. I appreciate you.
All right, DJ. Appreciate you, man. You have a blessed one, and I'll talk to you another time.
All right, you too.
All right, buddy. All right, folks. DJ Shockley, of course, are you hearing with doing a lot of stuff. You know what? It makes me feel like I'm a Lilliputian. All right, he's doing all the Big Ten and all that, which I still say Big Ten with what is it? 14 schools? Is it a Big Ten? Or, yeah, I think that's what it is. But anyway, that's the Big Ten. Anyway, folks, we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to kind of jump into some NFL stuff. We're going to try to get Orlando Ledbetter on the line and talk a little bit about the Falcons, that team that, you know, beginning of the season, we had high expectations, but a lot of injuries decimated the team, decimated the defense, certainly the offensive line. And a couple of players out there are going to talk to other teams. And I'm sitting here like, why are the Falcons not going after certain players? I don't care about some of the things that they've done or what they think about them. If they're tough players, I know they're guys, and one is that Richie Incognito, offensive lineman. Yeah, played in Miami. He was at part of that whole thing where they feel like he was bullying one of the other players or whatnot, but he's a tough sucker. All right. Offensive lineman. And right now, that's what the Falcons need. They need to find somebody who's going to move the offensive line to the other side, stop catching guys and you know, doing this passing stuff for Matt Ryan. I like Matt Ryan, but he's safe for the most part with the way that the passing game goes. With the receivers that he has, he should be doing more, I really feel. But it's kind of like Cutler up there in up in Chicago. You know, I know that he has big receivers. He has you know what? I compare them to the Falcons in terms of the receivers. But they're not something, whatever the reason is, it's not working. It's not working. It's not as explosive as everybody wants it to be. All right, folks, let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, like I said, we're going to get D. Orlando Ledbetter on to talk about the Falcons and maybe a little bit about other things that are going on in the NFL right here on the Gerald Riggs Show, Underneath the Helmet, Talk Zone Radio, talkzoneradio.com. We'll be right back.
Let's go back under the helmet for more of the Gerald Riggs Show. Here's Gerald Riggs.
All righty, folks. We are back here. Had a good time talking college football. Now we shift back to the real football, the ones that we come back to the one where they're getting paid. We just finished talking to the ones where they get pay cuts. In college football. All right. We got to talk about the Falcons a little bit and bring back a voice here. Folks, you've heard before. He's been here on the phone with me. We've talked about the Falcons extensively, and we're going to get into it a little bit more today. The president of the NFL Writers Association, we got D. Orlando Ledbetter. D. Led, what's up with you, buddy?
Hey, Gerald. Thanks for having me on the show, my friend.
Well, man, I'm glad that you can spend some time with me. And, you know, you're back from overseas with the Falcons, and you went over there, and you, I'm sure you had a few, tea and crumpets over there in London or something like that.
Oh, yeah, we had something like that. It's called
Stella. I tell you what, that was one trip, even though the NFL, and I know that they want to try to make this whole European thing or make the league global and all that, but I just did not like that London trip. I went over there with Washington one year, and I just didn't like it. I almost got hit going across the street because the car's coming the other way.
Yeah, I had to get my bearings, once we got over there and got situated, because it's a great walking city, but I was concerned that I was going to walk out in the traffic. Well, yeah, I understand. It took a while to get adjusted to that.
All right. I they can have that one. I'm not crazy about the NFL doing it, but you know what? They got to do it. They feel like they're trying to make it, like I said, a global game. Let's get to the Falcons, Donna. They break finally a five-game losing streak, beating Tampa Bay. But again, this is kind of the most confusing team, as I said, week in and week out, because we don't know what kind of team we're going to get from week to the next. A lot of injuries, a lot of things have happened. What's your take on it?
Yeah, Drew, I think now in this era where they don't let them wear the pads in the off season and the practices are so limited that we don't really get to see the coaches develop the players. And we end up seeing a lot of bad football on Thursday, Sundays, and on Monday Night Football. The practices are really hurting a lot of these teams, and a young team like Atlanta has to develop on the fly. And, you know, the hope for them is that, hey, they can pull this thing together here and make a run in the second half of the season.
Well, you know, I think with them trying to make a run right now, the most important part of it is going to be them being able to overcome all the injuries. Offensively is very, very difficult. Again, the offensive line, I'm going to have two players basically on that line that have been there from the start. And that makes it very, very difficult, you know, from a time of that cohesiveness that they need on the offensive line to protect, you know, of course, their quarterback, Matt Ryan, who's, you know, we talked about the explosiveness that they don't have this year. But I think a lot of it can be attributed to the fact that he's been under a lot of pressure.
Yeah, no question. And all they have is both guards, Justin Blaylock and John Austin Moore. The pressure has been there because of the backups that are playing. You know, moving forward, the way to help that out is to run the ball some kind of way. And against Tampa Bay, Gerald, they went to the jumbo tight end formation. They went with some old school I formation. They even set Steven Jackson 4 yards back in the fullback formation. formation and a short yardage deal and gave them a quick dive play. So they might just have to get back to some basic fundamental football, run the ball on people, and then set up play action passes. You know, that all this threading and out and doing all these fancy things, you know, may not fit the talent level that, of the linemen that they have. So, you know, these coaches are smart. They watch all this film and stuff and work till untold hours of the night. And, you know, they're going to come up with a plan that's going to fit their talent and give them an opportunity to at least compete on Sunday.
Does it seem like to you, or maybe it's just to me, that, you know, because of the fact that, that Matt's having to pass a whole lot, it, it seems like the receivers right now, big as they are, certainly with Julio and Roddy, and, you know, that, that they may be getting a little bit run down because they're running an awful lot of routes.
Yeah, no question. I don't have the total numbers on that, but, you know, right now, but, you know, they had 66 plays and they ran it 28 times. So that's pretty much, you know, that's close to being balanced. That's a lot closer than they've been in a lot of games. So the guys are definitely will need a break here. And, you know, if they can run the ball, that'll give them a chance to, you know, maybe slow some of those routes down and maybe give those guys a little bit of a break here. They do have the four running backs, but they seem to be leaning on Steven Jackson here. But, yeah, they're running an awful lot of routes. And, you know, Drew Davis is coming back here in the next couple of days, so that'll give him another body at wide receiver, another kid that has played some games. And then Hester and Harry Douglas have to step up and do a little bit more. So, you know, they'll have five receivers going down the stretch who's played and made some catches in the NFL and might be able to give Roddy and Julio a break here and there.
You know, if it were me as a head coach, I would call Steven Jackson in the office and I would send him down and say, you know, from the rest of this season on, from this game on, you might as well get ready for 35 plus carries a game. So you better get in the weight room if that's the case and get your butt in the jacuzzi. I'll give you some days off throughout the week, but we have got to find a way to pound the ground. We've got to be able to find a way to make this team solid on the offense. And I think the key to their offense is Steven Jackson. It's not the other guys, the small guys, whatnot. He's big enough, and I think that he's still tough enough to be able to take the load. But that's what I would say as far as that offense is concerned. So that, I'd like to see that happen with them. Let's move on to the defense. Nolan's defense now, of course, they've been, you know, I don't know what it's been. It seems like at times they can manufacture some pressure. Then other times they can't show up. Then what is really going on with the defense? Is it just guys maybe being out of position or something? You know, give us a little bit of something, D, on what, you know, at least what your assessment is of the defense at this time.
Well, you know, we've been watching Gerald and their whole plan, was that, hey, they had, some edge rushers or some people who can come off the edge if the middle of the pocket was collapsed. So, Paul Solia and Tyson Jackson were brought in to do that, and there's been some mixed results all across the board. Those guys have had trouble playing together. Nobody's coming free on a regular basis, and they had to fabricate some stuff here along the way. But Jonathan Massaquah was coming along, and then he got hurt, so that slowed him down. OC's trying to play at a high level, but he's only getting 20 snaps a game here, and he had 34 against Tampa and had his best game against that crew. But
is he hurt? Is he hurt or something? Or
no, they made him the designated pass rusher. Gerald, they didn't want him in there on rundown, so to speak. And so they tried to spot play him through the first eight games. But now with their backs against the wall, they might have to scrap that plan. And, you know, go with their veterans. Like you said, they need to go with Steven Jackson in the backfield. They need to go ahead and put the old guy out there. The young players they're trying to develop haven't done anything. So you may want to go with the proven guy. At least he knows how to get to the quarterback. He's got 80-plus career sacks. So I would say they need to scrap that plan and get him out there on a full-time basis.
Now, Coach Smith, what's his, you know, you can give the kind of the old vanilla answer that, you know, we're trying and, you know, we're trying to find a way to make some things happen or whatnot. But, you know, how is he holding up? Because this must be tough, you know, to say that again, you have to look back that 2 years ago, here's a team that was right on the threshold of going to a, you know, a championship possibly. And, you know, then everything has fallen by the wayside, so to speak. So how is he holding up with all of this?
He's doing very well. He's being professional about it. You can, you know, tell, you know, by his non-answers how he really feels. He doesn't like this. He wants to play. Any football player worth his helmet wants to get out there and play. But, you know, he's in a position where he's following orders from the coaches. They, you know, they've come up with this plan, and, you know, through 8 games, it hasn't worked. So, you know, if the plan doesn't work, don't stay with it. Switch it up. Get him out there. Let him get some snaps you know, see how that works for your defense. But he's been professional. He knows who's signing his check. You know, so it doesn't do him any good to come spouting off me, maybe, you know, about the situation. But he's been very professional about it. And, you know, we've certainly asked him about it several different times in several different ways to try to get him to crack. But he's been a pro about it.
Yeah. Now, if anything, the Falcons have a little bit of a saving grace in that the fact that the whole AFC South is just not playing all that great right now.
Ooh, no doubt, Gerald. Last night, that game, Carolina looked, they're the defending champs, and they looked pretty bad there. You know, couldn't block for Cam. They've got some issues with their line. They've had 5 different starting lines also. So, you know, that's been a problem. I was looking at the running back, Stewart and Williams here. Neither one of them are averaging over 4 yards a carry. And they got rid of his favorite receiver, Steven Smith.
Yeah.
So, Steve Smith. So, you know, he's trying to vibe with the rookie, but he's a rookie now. He shows flashes, and then he shows some problems. Like last night when he didn't run a slant out and led into an interception for Cam Newton. So they have their problems up there. That was supposed to be a pretty good defense, but I guess when you're on the field that much and the offense is kicking the ball away 5 times a game, that makes it pretty hard to play defense.
It makes it very tough to play defense. And now, you know, you look at the teams like the Saints, you know, they're struggling. Tampa is not even anywhere close to in the mix. So this is kind of one of those situations where, you know, the Falcons, if they can just muster up, you know, a winning streak now and win out maybe even in the rest of the division, they could possibly be in a good position to, you know, to finish out the season strong.
No question about it. They can take their division games. That would be the remaining 3 against, Carolina and, Carolina twice and the Saints. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, hey, maybe they could beat Cleveland and Pittsburgh, and that'll get you to 8-8, 6-2 in the second half of the season. You know, Green Bay and Arizona are going to be tough games for them to win. So it's certainly doable, Gerald, but, you know, they have to be more consistent. You can see where they'll put together a nice 10-play drive and then come back with 3 and out. You know, there's no consistency. They're up and down. And I think that speaks to the talent and the reserves on the team, but if they could find a talent level where they can play at and get into a little groove there and get consistent, get some turnovers on defense, you know, maybe they could string together a couple wins here and get into this race and take control of this poor division.
Well, we're all going to keep our fingers crossed. And certainly we hope that things can kind of be a little bit better here in this last few weeks and they can finish up strong. You're going to have to go in there and give them a pep talk, D, just like your little football team or something.
Okay, Joe, I'll try that. My little smarter Seahawks are headed to the championship game here for the Super Bowl on Saturday. The little 10-year-olds and the folks around Smyrna are pretty proud of those kids.
All right, what time are they're playing on Saturday?
At 1 o'clock up at Ackworth, Ackworth Fields in North Cobb County.
All right then. Well, I wish them luck, and it certainly seems like they're on their way. And again, once they win, then you can go in there and use that as an example to the Falcons. So let's
all right.
Yeah, let's do that then. All right. Hey D, I appreciate you, buddy. And
all right,
you know,
Joe.
We'll do it another time again, and certainly, hopefully, the Falcons can turn it around.
All right, Gerald, thanks for having me. It'll be fun watching to see if they can get it turned around here.
All right, bud, I'll see you at the game.
All righty, take care.
All right, take care, bud. All right, D'Orlando Ledbetter, folks, who's the beat writer for the Falcons and the president of the NFL Writers Association. So he's a very, very well-respected writer in the NFL ranks. Everybody thought so much of him that they decided to make him the president. So you know that you've got some clout there and certainly a lot of respectability as far as he's concerned with his work. But I read his article all the time, and he's always pretty much on spot with what goes on with the Falcons and some of the other things that are going around there around the NFL too. So if you get a chance to go to the AJC, that's the Atlanta Journal Constitution, and look him up on the sports. You'll see him there. And, again, I appreciate him coming on and giving me a little tidbit, a few little nuggets about the Falcons, who, again, I say is one of the most confusing teams in the league right now, next to Chicago, next to the baffling, Los Angeles Raiders. Okay. Not going to talk too much about NBA tonight. We're going to do that next week, because they're just getting started. And I, you know, for everybody who's out there kind of clamoring about the fact that the Lakers have, you know, they haven't won a game besides they won one. As a matter of fact, they won that first game, other night. It's a long season. 70 some odd games, I think is what it is, whatever they are, 70, almost 80 games that they have, to go. So it's going to be a long season. But at the same time, my Lakers are not built for the long haul. They're not built for, to make a strong run. New players, it just doesn't seem like showtime anymore. And not to say that we need to let it go. I would think so. People, we need to let it go. We can't worry about showtime anymore. It's no longer the Magic Johnson and Worthy and Scott and, Cooper and, you know, and the Cap, you know, with, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It's not that anymore. You know, even with Kobe there, it's still a team that, serviceable every week. All right. And that they come out and they have the possibility the ability to win, not win consistently, but they can win. I'm not going to go in that, because when I start talking about the Lakers, my blood pressure goes up. You see there, I start clamoring and shaking and all that sort of stuff, because I can't stand to see them go through what they've gone through nobody wants to come there and play. Nobody does. Nobody wants to play with Kobe. All right. I don't care what they say. Nobody wants to play with him. All right. Let's take we can take a quick break here, and then we'll come, can close it out. Let me get, wet my whistle a little real quick, folks, and we'll be right back here on Gerald Riggs Show, Underneath the Helmet, Talk Zone Radio, talkzone.com. We'll be right back.
Now, let's go back under the helmet for more of the Gerald Riggs Show. Here's Gerald Riggs.
All righty, folks. We're back. And you know what? There are a couple of things that also were going on as far as college football was concerned. I really found it quite interesting to see how the whole season was starting to kind of shape up here. We talked about earlier with DJ Shockley. We're talking about how the NCAA was, at least from the standpoint of how the bowl selection committee. It may be easy for them right now because of the fact that the SEC was kind of beating up on itself. And you look at the games that are going to be for this week. Number one, Mississippi State, taking on Alabama, who's at number five. That's somebody's going to be knocked out. All right, somebody's going to be knocked out of the picture altogether. And for Mississippi State to be ranked at number one coming into Alabama, folks, that's not an easy thing. And I'm sure that, you know, it's like always, be careful what you ask for. Because Alabama, if you watch them play, that was a heck of a game that they played the other night against LSU, winning the overtime. And, of course, Alabama gets the win. But that's a rugged team. And those were two very, very physical teams. And very physical in the sense that whoever has the ball last is not necessarily guaranteed to win, but who scores first is probably going to have a difficult time where the other team is going to score, because their defenses are tremendous. Tremendous defenses. Mississippi State right now being ranked at number one, you cannot say that they don't have a very, very tremendous defense themselves. But again, the SEC is beating up on each other. So how do you really, you know, when you look at it, now you like calculate all these, you know, these calculations or, you know, which wins are good, which wins are bad. You know, when you're winning or losing in the conference against the only teams that are right in the top 10 and 15. You know, if that's happening, these guys should never be at the top five. The top five should almost be SEC schools. Well, top six. No, top five. All right, the top six, and then maybe Florida State. But because when you get it, we look at it, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Alabama, LSU is not there right now, but they were still a pretty doggone good team. They were close. They were close. But Alabama is a team right now that I have to say, looking at Nick Saban is looking at that whole picture right now and saying, you know what? I like where I'm sitting right now. I am definitely in the pilot seat, and I'm just going to watch, see what happens. I don't think he really has that much. I mean, yeah, of course he has concerns about Mississippi State, but I think that Alabama team, they'll wear him down. They'll wear him down. If Mississippi State wins that game, it'll come from a lot of big plays. I think it'll come from a lot of big plays that they're going to have to make against Alabama and get up on them maybe, you know, 21 points. They're going to have to do that. But if it's a close game again like it was with LSU, a slugfest, so to speak, I don't think Mississippi State will win that. And certainly if Alabama gets up on them, it's over with. If Alabama gets up on them by 14 to 21 points, I don't foresee them coming back and beating Alabama. So that's going to be one of the most intriguing games of the weekend. Outside of, let me see, there's some other games going on. As I'm sitting here looking at the schedule, where, you know, Ohio State's taking on Minnesota. You got one of the teams that's kind of surprised me as a one-loss team is Duke. And they went up at 22, but you know what? At the same time, why? Why put them at 22? They've shown that for the last 2 years, okay, for the last 2 years, they've had some big wins. They played some very, very good football. Cutcliffe has that team over there, I think, dialed in. They're looking to finish out the season a lot stronger than just 22. And I think that they are a team that can skip way up here in this next few weeks. Left to be seen. We'll see what happens. But then you've got TCU taking on Kansas. Kansas, not doing all that great. Let's see who else. Not worried about Nebraska. Not worried about them. Not worried about Arizona. The Mildcats. Or today is Ricky Hundley's birthday. Ricky Hundley is a linebacker who played there when I was there. We called him the Mildcats, but nothing mild about Ricky Hundley. That was a man. That joker was a heck of a linebacker. I think we knocked each other out a couple of times. The other game is going to be Auburn at Georgia. That's going to be a heck of a game. Again, SEC games that are going to be knocking each other out. Florida State at Miami, even though that looks, you know, it looks like one of those games where you say, you know, Miami's not the Miami of old. They're not the U anymore. They're not all that. But I'm telling you, don't be surprised if they get up on Florida State and make it hard for them. Don't be surprised, because that game is at Miami. That's going to be one of the first sellouts that I think they have in Miami in a long time. That's going to be a heck of a game. The other team that I'm kind of surprised, well, I thought that they were really going to hand it to Ohio State was Michigan State. I really felt that they were going to do it, but they didn't. They didn't show up. I don't know what happened. Ohio State just got the better of them, and now they're knocked out. I'm not sure where they are right now. I think they're about 8 or I think they're maybe out of the top 10 or something. Maybe 10 or 11th or something like that. But either way, Michigan State, I thought that they should have done better against Ohio State. So they're, you know, that's going to be some pretty good games. All right. Going to be some really, really good games coming up this weekend. So folks, you know, get settled in and get ready to watch some very, very good college football. The NFL kind of takes backseat on Saturday. All right. There's nothing that the NFL can do to compete, you ask me, with the college football. I didn't get a chance to actually, even though my son is playing there with Notre Dame, and most of you know that who listen to me, he didn't get a chance to play against Arizona State. He had had a foot injury or so he was out. And they picked on the defensive back that came in to replace him. Oh, did they ever? They went after him. big game, but a big game. Notre Dame loses to my alma mater, Arizona State, over the weekend. That was a huge, huge game for them. Brings now up to number 7 in the top 10, and that's great. It's been a long time since they've been up there. Shades of Jake Plummer days. And I hope that they do well. We'll see what happens with my Sun Devils, as they are, could be that fly in the ointment before it's all said and done. All right, so we'll see. We will see, folks. And other stuff that's going on here in the in college football, you know, I really like the fact that, you know, at least at this point in time of the season, this is week 12. This is going into week 12 of the football season, that, you know, it's starting to make it a little bit more difficult for the people to sit here and say, especially that selection committee, to say that we can only look at 4 teams, because I guarantee you there's going to be one of those 2 teams on the top may drop off. One of the 2. I'm not saying Florida State or Mississippi State are going to lose, but if they do, it's going to mix up even more, because there's going to be a whole lot of one-loss teams. What do you do in that case? What do they do? I wouldn't want to be there sitting in the room with all of them. And I was talking with one of the other guys there about Twitter. And it's like, you know, these guys, what can they talk about? What can they base it on? When they start looking at the statistics and all that, and look at the who's won, what against what. I mean, a lot of teams, you know, Stanford at the time, you know, they were in the top 10. Now they're out of the top 25. You look at some of the other schools that play in the beginning of the season that you thought were going to be pretty good, and now they're knocked out. So then how do you factor in those wins and losses and all that? You know, let's not start getting back into that whole computerized thing again. You know, strength of schedule stuff or whatever. Because when it comes to, you know, at this time of year, everybody's got those little, you know, sisters of the poor schools on their list now to kind of get healthy for, to make a strong run. Okay. Everybody's doing it. You know, don't say that, you know, some of these schools are taking an easy way out. Not all of them. Clemson and Georgia Tech's going to be a pretty good game. You know, who else? You know, I don't want to go down the whole list or whatever, but it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what happens. You know, South Carolina, for instance, Steve Spurrier and his team, they were up there ranked pretty high, you know, going into the season. Now they're not even in the top 25. They're out of it. Way out of it. So it's like, you know, what really goes on? But we're going to, you know, we'll delve into that next week when we come back, when things are, you know, the picture may be a little bit more, either more murky, or it may be clearer. Hopefully it'll be clearer. I know one thing in the NFL is it's pretty much solid right now. You got some pretty good teams. You got Denver, you got the Green Bay, you got New England, who else is up there? San Francisco, Dallas, unfortunately. We'll see what happens with them. So, you know, there are some teams that are going to be there. There are some teams that are going to be in the hunt. And that's what I like to see, when they're in the hunt. But if they're not, oh, gosh almighty, it makes you, it just drives you nuts. Drives you nuts. All right, I enjoyed today. Thanks, DJ Shockley. Come on, talk about college football and his days of Georgia a little bit. And certainly what's going on with Mark Richt down there, as folks need to get off his back. National championship or not, I think there are a lot of schools who would love to be in the situation where Georgia's always in the top 20, at least by the virtue of the fact, you know, the players that he has here and how he gets those guys prepared to play. That's pretty neat. I like to see that. I like a coach who does that more than anything. I'll take him over a lot of coaches who are just not doing quite the right things. All right. And again, for D. Orlando Ledbetter, talk a little bit about the Falcons. Next week, we're going to try to do some things. I tell you what, we try to get some of the Carolina players on, as they're taking on the Falcons this week. But I don't know if they're, you know, if any of them want to be seen or heard of or heard from the way that they played last night. Ugh, that was ugly. All righty, folks. We're going to get out of here. We will see you next time here on the Gerald Riggs Show, Underneath the Helmet, folks. We thank you for joining us, and we will talk to you next week. Well, until then, have a great day. Take care.